Welcome to another episode of COVID Chronicles, a podcast by, for, and about people affiliated with Portland Mennonite Church in Portland, Oregon. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum, and my guest is Garrett Bishop. Welcome, Garrett. I'm so happy to have you.
Thank you. Thanks for doing this. It's been fantastic to listen to these.
You are most welcome. Since you've been listening, you know that we start at the beginning, and I know you a little bit because, just full disclosure, we've been in a small group together for the last couple of years, even though we haven't met a lot recently. I'm pretty sure that you were not born in Oregon. Where were you born?
I was born and raised in Conifer, Colorado. Conifer is west, southwest of Denver, about 45 minutes in the foothills. So it's about 8,000 feet in elevation, and it's pretty remote, or at least was.
Was that a home area for your parents, or what were they doing there?
No, I'm a Pennsylvania Mennonite that was raised in Conifer, Colorado. So both of my parents are from the same place as the Rushes. So Linda and Lynn Rush, they're from eastern Pennsylvania. Souderton and Hatfield were the towns that they grew up in.
So what were they doing in Colorado?
It's a little bit of a long story, so I'll give you the skinny. Like some of the other guests that you've had, they found themselves out west at the time of Vietnam War. It's a little bit different from my folks. They went to Christopher Dock together. My dad's a few years older, and he had graduated and was happy that he had graduated from high school and did not want to follow his siblings to Goshen College because he was done with his academic endeavors. And my grandparents said, no, we'd like you to go to college. And he reluctantly agreed to go to Heston and give it a few years. And as a child who's not interested in education, you can imagine that it was difficult for him to want to be there in, you know, rural Kansas, and found himself completing a year and then being asked to not come back. And so he couldn't go back to Pennsylvania because his parents were probably going to be upset. And he had some friends that were a year older than him that had gone from Heston to Colorado for voluntary service. And his older brother was doing voluntary service in Colorado, in Denver, at a hospital there. And so he went to Denver because his buds were there and his older brother was there. And my mom graduated from Christopher Dock and decided, you know, I'm going to go out to Denver. And so they were in Denver there together and got engaged and then came back to Pennsylvania and got married and then went back to Denver. And that was in 1974. So before me, they bought a house in downtown Denver and started attending First Mennonite of Denver, and then decided that their dream was to build a house in the mountains. And so they bought property, 3 acres in Conifer. And my dad read Popular Mechanics at the time and saw an ad for log homes that were milled in Montana. And one of his friends was a builder and said, hey, I'll help you for a few months. And they went out to Conifer, found the piece of property, ordered the home. And actually today is their last day with the house after 42 years. They built the house and raised all three of us at that house.
So where are they going next?
I know this question's coming anyway, so I might as well speak to it. But I am in the middle of three boys. We're all 4 years apart. Colin, my older brother, and then Lucas, my younger brother. And then I'm in the middle. And they are co-living with Luke and his family in Golden, right at the base of Table Mountain in Golden, Colorado. So not too far away. That's about 20, 25 minutes from their house in Conifer. So it's a lovely place. I was just back helping them kind of organize and get out of the old house and into the new house.
Since I'm such a sentimental person, is it a little sad for you that they're leaving this house where you grew up?
It is. It was a wonderful place to grow up. And it was a great home that they made for us. And, you know, we were out in the woods and there was always an adventure of sledding or a creek that ran through the back. And especially when we got those big, you know, Colorado storms at 2:30 that roll in every day in the summer, and to just be out there in the creek and doing all sorts of just kind of whatever you wanted to do. It felt like a hike was just outside your door, which was fantastic in retrospect. And at the time, I think you just, it's what you're used to. And I remember in high school, you know, everybody there that I can't wait to get out of Conifer. You know, it's just, everything was at least a 6-minute drive to the grocery store. And, you know, if we wanted to see a movie, it was 25 minutes down to Littleton or Golden or so, you know, this is just a lot of car time to do those things that high schoolers want to do. The way I equate it to here is like if you lived in Welch's or Zigzag, you know, and you had to go to Gresham to be in a populated area. That's what I grew up around.
So obviously, living in that small town, you went to public school.
Yes. Yeah, I went to public school.
And about what size would an average class be during your growing up years, elementary, junior, senior high?
We bused really efficiently. So the schools were pretty big. I would say I probably had 25 kids in my class in kindergarten through sixth grade. We had a middle school that was a junior high. So ninth grade was in middle school, part of the junior high, because the high schools were so overloaded. So we had three classes of, you know, first, second, third, all the way through, and there were about 25 kids in all of those classes. And then our high school was built. I went there for the very first year. We were the first class that was in, I graduated in 99, but it was 96 when I was a sophomore and started at Conifer High School. And it was a brand new, beautifully built, fantastic school. And there were 1,200 students at Conifer at the time. So pretty big.
So as you would go up, it sounds like the schools drew from further and further out.
We rode a bus for 45 minutes every day there and back. And that's where we picked up all the naughty behavior. I remember, you know, you're on a bus with kids that are in sixth grade and they're probably not using the best language, and just imagine it's rural Colorado. You know, these kids are of all sorts of different, you know, makings. So yeah.
That was actually my next question. Are there any stories from these bus rides that you can share with us so that stand out?
Our bus driver was a ski bum, you know, and he would listen to classic rock, and it was a talk radio in the morning. And I was the first stop. So I remember he used to just have, it was Lewis and Floorwax, it was a Fox classic rock station. And these guys were saying things that were definitely made for adult ears. And it was, you know, a funny talk radio show that it was this same radio show that my dad would be listening to as well. So I didn't feel put out by it. I liked it, but you know, it was just that kind of, I'm going to sit and listen to classic rock with the bus driver. And, you know, I got my choice of seats cause I was the first one. So I always sit in the back, but I have great memories of listening to a Sony Walkman. That was not mine, but a friend would let me borrow, and he had Guns N' Roses User Illusion 1, which was like the kind of the big Paradise City and a bunch of those songs that Welcome to the Jungle that we just repeat and, you know, kind of stretch out the earphones so you could both hear and just kind of hunker down and listen to a Walkman.
I'm going to get you into high school quickly here. During high school, were you involved in any extracurricular activities? And the fact that you lived so far away, I don't know if that had any bearing on that or not.
So the high school was 6 minutes, 8 minutes away, which felt close. My older brother went to Evergreen High School, but which was more about, you know, 20, 25 minutes, still mountain living, but a pretty good wiggle. So it was great when Conifer was built and we got to just be able to go down to the school fairly quickly. It felt like I played baseball all the way through from when we were little kids to college. Baseball was a religion in our family and we all played. And it was a big reason that we probably didn't attend First Mennonite as often, because between three kids playing, we almost always had something that was occupying our time on Sunday, whether it was a tournament or not. So baseball was it. We also were pretty, in high school, my younger brother and I were pretty avid snowboarders at that time and still are. But I think the biggest thing that is hard to explain, our kids ski now too, and they don't understand that at that time, snowboarding was invented. You know, snowboarding was a new thing when I was in middle school. And so I transitioned from skiing to snowboarding. And in Colorado, at least, I've had this conversation recently with friends that spent some time in Colorado. And they said, you know, you've never skied a basin and you grew up in Colorado. Shame on you. And I said, you know what? I wasn't allowed to ski at a basin because snowboarders were hated. We didn't get into resorts because we had a different shaped board on our feet. And so for that first, you know, 5-10 years, there were definitely resorts, a lot of resorts in Colorado that wouldn't let you snowboard. They were banned. And so that was, it's just interesting to think back. At the time, it felt like, okay, I can understand they don't want us. And now when I talk to our kids and other people that say, you haven't skied that, well, I didn't ski that growing up because I wasn't allowed to go there when I was really in my prime skiing in Colorado. I couldn't go. So just an interesting.
Were you good?
I think it's the perspective there. You know, I spent a lot of time snowboarding and skiing, and I think it depends on who you talk to. I snowboarded with some people that were Olympic caliber and actually won gold medal. So compared to them, I was not. But compared to your average Joe, yeah, like I can get down. Yeah.
And which position did you play in baseball?
I was a catcher from, probably second grade through.
How are your knees?
They're great. Yeah. A little backstory. I think it was probably 7. And when my knees just started hurting and were swollen and hot, and you know, my mom was in a full panic. We live 45 minutes outside of any populated, you know, hospital area, and I couldn't move my knees. When we were little, the phone line was actually a shared party line where you'd pick up the phone and you'd have to say, "Hello, high school couple, who's talking? I would like to use the phone because my child is injured or sick, or can you hang up so I can call the doctor's office?" And so she had many of those moments, and we went down to Children's Hospital, and the doctor said that, you know, there was x-rays and all sorts of things, and he said, "Your child has juvenile rheumatoid arthritis, and this either will go away and he'll never have an issue, or this could, you know, stay with him and haunt him the rest of his life." So it went away. And then when I said I wanted to be a catcher, my parents were just like, well, one, it's expensive, all that equipment. And two, your knees, you know, what if you, this arthritis thing is a big deal, you might have problems. And it's never been an issue. So
I'm guessing that you went to college. Was it understood in your family that that was the next step after high school?
It was the desire for sure. Yeah. That we should all pursue college. And I think a big part of that was that neither of my parents had completed college, and my mom really wanted to, and my dad didn't want to. And so Goshen was the school that mom would have gone to. And Goshen was the school that my aunts and uncles went to, and lots of family members had gone to, and the school that my older brother had gone to. And we had been out for Little Sibs weekend, and just kind of, you know, it was fantastic to think that you could walk out your dorm room and go down to a, albeit terrible, restaurant at 10 o'clock. And that was the freedom, you know, like, wow, this is going to be amazing. And I remember feeling that. And then the first few days when you're going through the introductory of it all, people are saying, "You moved from where?" You know, and I'd say, you know, Denver. And they'd be like, "I just don't understand why you would do that to Northern Indiana." And for me, it was, I didn't know anything else, you know, that grandeur and that beauty of those mountains. it's what you're used to. You don't want it when it's there all the time. Whereas like pancake flat, disgusting humidity, this feels pretty good because it's different. And it was, to me, I had explained Mennonite my whole life to everyone that I met. And it was always Mormon. No, not that. Starts with an M, but not, you know. And so why don't you have G.I. Joe? Why don't you have these things in your house? Why don't, you know, and rural Colorado, you get people that have guns for hunting and have, you know, just G.I. Joe's all over the place and Nerf this, Nerf that. That wasn't in our house because, you know, for obvious Mennonite reasons. And it was tough to explain conscientious objector and to explain Anabaptist and to, you know, you just don't want to get into it. So when I got to Goshen, that felt warm and home and nice.
And at what point in your college career did you know, or maybe from the very start, what you were interested in and what you might want to major in? What's that story?
I knew, I think, that I wanted to study business. And I think I got pulled a little bit into communication by my older brother being in communication. And both my older and younger brother are comm majors. And one is a news director for NBC in Buffalo, where you are from. And so NBC Buffalo is his baby. And my younger brother is a video editor in Golden. So they both were comm. And I think that I had that kind of comm grounding that I wanted to have. And so I started out as a comm major, but business was going to be my minor. And then I flip-flopped those. But business to me has always just been interesting. I like to see how things work. My dad owned a print shop in our local mountain community. So he was a printer for many years. And so I remember just going, seeing how all that worked and how he would run the business. He'd be in the back on a press and then he'd be in the front and working with customers and they'd be coming in and they knew each other because it was this cool community where everything's small and they know each other. And that felt good. And my mom, she is just exceptional. Just in terms of she went from just working at a call center at Continental to taking a company public with an IPO. So, and she's just been very inspirational.
So news, communication, all of those kinds of things are almost in your blood, it sounds like.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think the business, I started a business when I was in second grade with little like snowboard fingerboards. And I remember my dad was a printer. And so he said, you need business cards. And so we made these business cards. And then I hired an employee and he distributed business cards in everybody's mailboxes. So it's got my name and my parents' phone number on these cards. And this kid goes around and puts them in all of his local mailboxes. And then the postal company comes and opens up these mailboxes and there's 100 mailboxes that have business cards in them with my information. They call the number on it and say, is Garrett Bishop there? And my mom answers the phone and says, yeah, but he's 7. And they say, well, he can't be distributing mail without stamps, paid postage. And she said, Garrett, did you do this? And I said, no, it's not even in our neighborhood. I hired Eric to do it. So, you know, that's just a funny story of we made these things and successfully sold them. And I just liked that, you know, when people wanted to play Monopoly, I liked that. And so when I got to Goshen and, you know, I had this business background of seeing my mom be successful and my dad be successful. And I thought, this is interesting to me. I like it. And I always wanted to pull back the layers of what made all the different businesses work. My first job was I threw hay for a rancher who also had bison, a huge herd of bison and then of elk too. And so I would be throwing hay and then I'd be working with these huge animals. And then it's weird because rural Colorado is weird, but it was also a cemetery. And so I'd mow grass at the cemetery and have to do other odd jobs at the cemetery. But just seeing how that thing worked and what the business of this was, I think all of it was sort of bubbling and making me want to be a business major. And so business with a focus on marketing and a comms minor was where, yeah.
I have so many questions, but we need to move on. So at some point, you somehow got to Portland, Oregon. So I'm sure that there's a story behind that.
Yeah, I graduated from college and went to work at an outdoor gear company. This is a very long story, so I'll keep it very short. The company was Moose Jaw Mountaineering. They were very fun. Their communications and personality was fun, and I got drawn in as a user, a customer who bought rock shoes from them, rock climbing shoes, and thought these guys are great. Oddly, Moose Jaw is located in Detroit, Michigan, just north of Detroit, Michigan, where you know nobody's rock climbing unless it's indoors. And so I fell in love with the brand, and I sent an email to them as a junior in college and said, I love you guys. My REI membership is on pause as long as you're around. And I got a call from somebody, and he said, I loved your email. He called himself Little Bobby, which was funny knowing him now. And he said, I was seeing his shirt. And so he sent me a shirt, and I wore it proudly for a year. And then after, it's middle of my senior year, I'm thinking, what am I going to do with myself? Where do I want to work? Do I want to go back to Colorado? And this brand kept standing out, and I just sent them an email or called them. I can't remember. And they said, we're not hiring in the marketing area. We have customer service jobs, but they're low paying. We don't want anybody to relocate. And I said, okay, well, can I just come up there and see what it's like? This was a 4-hour drive. I said, yeah, sure. So I got up there and ended up liking it and saying, I want to work for you. And they said, we like you too. You're going to get $8 an hour. And you're going to work customer service. We don't have a marketing role at this point. And you played college baseball, and our softball team, our co-ed softball team, struggling. So we need you to play. And we don't like the name Garrett, but what do you think about being called Indy? And I said, okay, I've been, called a lot worse than that. And they said, well, you're moving from Indiana to this job, and we've called you Indy over the last few weeks of communication. We like to keep doing that. And so if you're agreeable to those terms, we'd like to continue. And so professionally, I've been known as Indy to this day, 20 years later.
That explains the name on your Zoom. I've never understood that. Thank you.
Yeah. So that's the softball team. Unfortunately, we always finish second place, but we did pull it up a couple notches, I think. And that was a joy to work there. That was good people. It's owned by Walmart now. I worked there for 5 years and built a marketing team, and we won lots of great awards, and we built a massive business that's now owned by Walmart. And 5 years into that, Jen and I had gotten married. We met at Goshen, and she went to Davis to get her master's degree in biomechanics after graduating from Goshen with a degree in physics. And so we got engaged as she was finishing up her master's degree at Davis, and we got married, and she found a job at Henry Ford Health System at the hospital there and was working in a lab. And so we bought our first house in Michigan and lived there for almost 2 years before Nike dream job came up for her. And she was very fortunate to get that job, and we were very fortunate to move to Portland sight unseen. She had been here for a conference, and we knew that some of our friends at the time, Tom Staley, lived out here, and he was a good friend of ours. And we knew that he and some buddies were out here, but we didn't know how many. And I remember Nike sent us out here for just a visitation. It was an 8-day thing, and we were staying downtown. And I texted Tom and said, we're in town. And he said, hey, well, we're downtown at Powell's. And so I said, okay, well, let's meet up. And I just remember, Shanda Hostetler comes out, and Levi Kropp, and Ashley Sider, and all these people that we knew at the time, because we just knew Shanda. And then it was like a magical day in Portland where everything was warm and people were out walking around downtown. And we're there just making sure that we like this place. And it was just like the warmth and energy of everybody. These people we knew but didn't know well made us feel like this is it. Living in Detroit for 5 years without a Mennonite church to go to, we came to PMC that weekend too and thought, this is great to be able to have a church that feels like a liberal Mennonite church that we're going to fit in. And they have a dedication to singing four part, not so much out of that purple book that we disagree on. So that was our first venture into Portland.
And what year was that?
We moved here in 2008.
Wow. There's so much more to the story. So you've basically been at Portland Mennonite since before you even moved here.
We went to Portland Mennonite before we officially moved. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you're still here.
We're still very much here. Yeah. I mean, I think we're excited to get back in person. We're excited to have the kids really know what it means to be part of a congregation more so. They were just starting to get into having friends in Sunday school classes and, you know, start thinking about going out to camp in the summer together at Drift Creek and all of that stuff. So.
And the pandemic has put a damper on it, to put it mildly, with not being able to be in person for the last 18 months. But it sounds like that may be changing now that the kids can get vaccinated.
Yeah, well, I'm curious to see what that will look like. You know, I think vaccination quells some fears, but also we're pretty used to all of the ways that we survived over the last few years. So I think getting out of that new normal is going to be trying for a lot of people.
It's a process. It doesn't happen overnight, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, and I know you're running your own business. Can you give me the 1 minute version of that, how you got into that?
Yeah. So as fate would happen, I worked at Moose Jaw with the fabulous founder. His name's Robert Wolf, for 5 years, and moved to Portland and did various other great jobs. J.J. Berkey and I had an awesome time working together with a small startup here called Plywork, and just great people and great learnings and building special things. And so I kind of bopped around between a few jobs in Portland. And at the time, Robert and the actor Edward Norton had connected and built a platform for giving that was called CrowdRise. And it helped people raise money for nonprofits, specifically through running marathons was the initial way the platform got started. And so Robert contacted me and just said, hey, we're at a point where we need somebody to really run the marketing side of the business. And we had stayed in touch over the few, I think it was 4 years that we hadn't worked together. And I said, that sounds great. You know, let's get this together and see where we can take it. And so we did. And I was at CrowdRise for, I think it was about another 5 years, three to five years somewhere. And so we built it from a, you know, 20 person company to a pretty decent sized business that got acquired by GoFundMe 5 years ago. And at that point, Eli was, our oldest son was starting kindergarten in the fall. And we thought, well, what from here? I needed to get another job. So I started applying and started trying to figure out what that would look like, and then decided, well, maybe at the same time as I'm applying, I could just see if I can start my own business, be a consultant. And I had this experience of, I can run ads for people, I can do creative, I can build websites, I can do all the things that I was doing internally for businesses, but I could just see what people gravitate towards and be that advisor for them. And it turned out really well where, you know, I've got a couple businesses that I thought, okay, I'm going to do this as a one-off and they'll be done. And then it'll be a scramble to find the next. And instead they said, this worked out well. Can you stay on and manage? And so it's basically turned into sort of an agency retainer type consultancy where I have 10 or so businesses that I, you know, I just work with them as their marketing director and handle all the stuff that they need. And then I still do special projects and friends who need websites or friends who need whatever. I'm happy to work with people on that. But it's been fantastic. It gives me flexibility that I need, and I get to exercise that creative side. So,
and you get to work from home.
I get to work from home. I had 4 coworkers that were impeding my day-to-day progress. But yeah, I do get to work from home.
And some of them are little people, not quite as little as they used to be, but
not the coworkers you'd want to hire. Yeah. They do disarm times that are tense, you know, which is nice to forget about work when somebody just wants to play a game or something.
Well, Garrett, thank you so much for giving us this amazing glimpse into your life.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me. I cried less than I thought I would.
And thank you for joining us for this episode of COVID Chronicles. If something you heard raised questions or you discovered a connection, take the opportunity to reach out and continue the conversation. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum. Until next time, stay well and keep the faith.